Sequentia by Susan Alexander. Susan's one of our favorite people. That cut was guanine. And we always put music before and after the show so that they have a way to cut the show or add a little more to it in case we don't stop right on time. You know, that music, it was guanine, the DNA. It's kind of haunting to me. And I guess that's one of their reasons is that I have a problem with that particular nucleotide, guanine. So that's an interesting piece for me. Now, Brian Butterworth wrote a book about our brains and how we're hardwired for math. And Susan Alexandra in that music took that a step further and set that math into songs. And she has a CD called Sequentia. You can probably find it at Amazon or some other store that sells CDs. But we love the music. This is Sound Health. I'm your host, Sherry Edwards, for the next hour. We also have a guest host today, Nikki Bird. Thank you for joining us, Nikki. Nikki's been with us before, and she had a special interest in the topic that we're going to talk about and the guest that's going to be on. So on this show, we attempt to bring you information and ideas about the concept of self-health, the idea that we're each responsible for our own health from the inside out. We believe in the body green, supporting health and wellness through the body's own natural resources to create sustainable self-health. We're going to be taking phone calls today. The toll-free number for the station is 877-876-5227. Toll-free in Canada, 888-815-9756. And there is a direct number, 530-876-3222, but Don tells me that they're having trouble with their lines. If you can't get through, you can write to us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. I'm going to be monitoring that. I'm also monitoring Sherry on air, Sharry on air, all one word, at gmail.com. People are complaining that they can't get through while we're on the show, so we're just going to kind of try to do two things here at once. Our guest today is Dr. Carol Wright-Berger. She is the author of Healing Happens With Your Help and What Color Is Your Personality? We will be taking listener questions and comments. First, we have one announcement from our sponsor, the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. As many of our regular listeners know, we're giving away a computer program that allows people to gain information about their inner selves, what they really want, what they really need, without the old tapes, peer pressure, parental, kid demands, whatever is going on in your life and what's pushing you toward making the decisions that you don't quite feel comfortable about. The program, NanoVoice, is from InnerSense Software, and it's completely free. We don't even ask you for your email address. Nothing. There's also a free manual and a free class. I think the last class we had room for 50 people, and we had 55 people registered and 49 showed up. So that is excellent that so many people are interested in looking at themselves from a real perspective. I want to say real as in terms of integrity. Now, our aim with this is to create a community of people who desire to live with full knowledge of what brings their life into balance and harmony. So we take a vocal sample, really quick, less than 2 minutes, just have you speak into a microphone, and the computer does the rest. There's full printout, 4 and 5 pages of topic-specific information. What kind of partner do you want in your life? What would be your perfect job? Your innermost feelings about the direction in your life. You know, you can deceive yourself and your family and your friends with the words that you say, but the frequencies of your voice will always tell you the truth. So if you guys are interested in that free program, go to Nano Voice, N-A-N-O, which means 1 billionth, nanovoice.org, and it'll give you a tiny printout of who you are based on the topic you put in. You know, and the real reason we're putting this out is to show people that their voice really contains information, accurate information about who they are. We want to get people used to this idea that their voice can give them information. So download it. No questions asked. We won't even ask you your email. We don't even know who has downloaded it. Although if you want to attend the class, we need to know who you are so we can send you an invitation because space is limited. So nanovoice.org. You can write to us at class@vocalprofileinc.com. I'll give you more addresses as we go along. Our goal is to start a new trend of providing people with software in support of self-help. And we also want to encourage you to make lots of copies of the software and give it away to your friends. Show them how to use it. The manual's free. There's one little page of instructions on the Nano Voice as you download it. It's just 6 clicks, and ta-da, you know, it's bopping right out of your computer. We're also going to be doing this eventually online as soon as we get that together. We want people to know about what's authentic about them and how to live authentic lives. We want to be part of that history, that turning point for people. So you can get in touch with us at the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology for appointments, information, free downloads, free videos. Write to us at soundhealth@soundhealth.org or call us at 740-6989-119. Visit our website, Nutra, N-U-T-R-A, sound.com, or just jump on the internet under Sherry, S-H-A-R-R-Y, Edwards, and we're there thousands of times. You can find us. Okay, on with our special guest. We're so intrigued with this guest, Carol Reitberger, Ph.D., author of 2 fascinating books, Healing Happens with Your Help, and What Color is Your Personality? Welcome to the show, Dr. Reitberger.
Oh, thank you for having me this evening.
You know, I was introduced to your books from Nikki, our guest host today. She read your books first, and then she kept showing them to me and saying, this is incredible. And as I looked at it, I found the color personalities. I found that very, very intriguing. How did you come up with a concept that a personality has a color?
Well, I kind of cut my teeth on the Myers-Briggs. That's the way I say it. I'm Jungian trained. And one of the things I found with personality assessments is that they're very informative, but it's hard to recognize who you are, to remember who you are once you've taken the assessment. The Myers-Briggs is a phenomenal instrument. But what it does is it defines people by 4 letters. And after 30 days, people would say, well, what's your personality letters? And they go, I don't know, I don't remember. So I went back to Max Luscher's work that did a lot of research on the psychology of color. So I just put behavior around personality, predictable behavior, observable behavior, and then I found that color is a non-threatening way to be able to talk about our differences instead of saying to someone, wow, you're really a control freak. But, of course, if they do need to have control, they think you're complimenting them. But on the other hand, if that's uncomfortable for you, it creates attention. So I just started taking the psychology of color, how color affects our physiology of our body, putting it with my work with personality, and then just created this marriage where we can talk in the language of color.
I find it intriguing. Beautiful, beautiful color book. Can you give us a short rundown? You'll not go through these hundreds of pages here, which are great, but just a short rundown on each of the color personality types.
Absolutely. Thank you. There are 4 colors, red, orange, yellow, green, and in those colors, each one of those colors are associated with what I call neurology, part of the hardwiring. The interesting thing about personality where I work with it is that we're born with a specific personality neurology that basically says, you're going to gather information this way, make decisions this way, and no matter how much we expand as we grow into this maturity, those that neurology stays the same. So the red personality tends to be the largest number of personalities based on my research and statistical analysis. The red is down-to-earth, grounded, pragmatic, dogmatic. I swear they were born with a watch in their stomach, in their head, on their wrist, because their whole world is around time. They value it more than anything else, productivity around it. Thing that irritates them the most is when people waste their time. No matter whether they're young or they're old, that seems to be a definitive pattern. They make decisions based on logic. They make they gather information by the physical senses from a red's world. If you can't see it, hear it, touch it, taste it, smell it, it doesn't exist. Now, the orange personality, now they are the social personality. They're the most people-oriented of all the personality colors. They're kind, considerate, cooperative, caretakers by nature. They're emotional in their decision-making. As with the red, it has to be grounded in the physical senses. But they make decisions based on how they feel and emotional judgment. Well, the red is, it's just plain facts. Give me the facts, ma'am, and let's just deal with it. The orange has to feel it. They put other people's emotional needs before their own. They're very sensitive people. Their best day in their life is to be able to take care of people, and they want everybody just happy and not worry, and which is interesting because they're really kind of the worriers of the personality world. So from the orange, social, people, good times, good food, good wine, good conversation, and just spending time with the people that you love and care about. The yellow personality lives in their head. They make decisions logically. They're visionaries where they see the big picture, but very grounded and very logical and very systematic, and they're very good at putting together strategies and programs and plans and org charts and all those things. But they do, they live in their head, and their biggest challenge is they live so much in their head and then they have to come back and fit in the physical world. You and I had talked about that a little bit. From the yellow standpoint, the thing that irritates them the most is somebody says, make a decision. And they can very, very quickly from the standpoint if they're pressed, but they like to think about it. So from that standpoint, the yellow is in their head. It loves challenges. They live to solve problems. I mean, it's like I always say in their energy, they're exuding like, ask me, ask me, ask me, I have all the answers. They may not, but you don't usually know that. But they're a problem solver different than the red. Red is solve the problem in front of you. Yellow is solve the problem in the future, what's in front of you, and then let's not ever have it happen again. The green, oh, my goodness. I'll tell you, these are the fun meisters of the world. They love life. They love people. They love their relationships. They are the cheerleaders of the personality world. They're easygoing, enthusiastic about anything. They make decisions, again, like the orange, on emotional judgment. It has to feel right. For the orange, the decision has to feel right in their gut. For the green, it has to feel right in their heart. And the green is big picture thinker. They love to create. They love to brainstorm. They love to just be and just do. And it isn't important for them to do anything with all these great ideas. And that's where it drives the red crazy, because reds think, well, if you're going to create an idea, put together a plan, let's do the steps and let's make it happen. And the green just loves the pleasure of just sitting around and brainstorming. So each one of those colors goes with a neurology, and any time we have to step out of that neurology with where when it's not our own intention, meaning we can step out of our own color as far as our neurology up to a point, but when somebody else presses us out of that neurology, then we get fight or flight. So once you understand personality, Sherry, it's an easy way to recognize there's four different ways to see the same thing, and each one of those personalities really believe in the very depths of who they are, their way is the only way to see it.
Is this sort of a learned behavior or something genetic? Is it like an astrology chart?
Well, it is. From the standpoint, there is this genetic component, and that's where my work is. And as you mentioned, we do have a learned part of our personality because we have to learn to fit in this world and to communicate differently with different people with different neurology. But this part of personality in all my research is literally hardwired. We're genetically born with it. It tells the brain how to develop, how to gather, how to make decisions, how to function, what causes stress, where stress occurs in the body. And then the learned part is the part that we try to fit in and kind of create what I call this chameleon other part of us to fit. But anytime we get stressed, the neurology of who we are always comes forward, and it always drives our behavior. And we, as you and I have talked about the fact that, for example, the red and the yellow use terms like, well, what do you think? Tell me what your thoughts are. Give me a picture. But and for the orange and the green, they'll say, well, how do you feel? How do you feel about this? And the red is in there going, feel, feel, touch. Oh, with my hand, you mean? Because they're very literal. Mm-hmm. And the yellow is like this big picture goes off, and it's like, oh, loaded question, must think about it.
Nikki is with us, and we both took the test that's in your book, and she ends up being an orange, but she doesn't want to be an orange. Is there a way to transition?
No, and you know, I just send great love because there isn't an orange that sees this and thinks, I don't want to be that way, but that is the way, that meaning information needs to make sense, and then it's got to feel right. And that's a difficult place to be because it's like trying to get a scale balanced on your in your brain that, okay, well, it feels right, but it doesn't feel right. Well, if it doesn't feel right, then I can't make the decision. And oranges don't like conflict. They don't want anything that's going to create a problem. So they get caught up in this inner turmoil about not being able to really say what they want, or when they do, people don't pay attention. And they're very cooperative people, and it doesn't take a lot to make an orange happy. But I said to an orange the other day when I was doing a big workshop, I said, so oranges, what do you do for fun? What do you do? And every one of them, male and female, said, spend time with my family. And I said, well, when do you have time for your own self-care? And you could have dropped a pin, because all of them looked at me like I'd come off a different planet. It's like self-care. Well, I mean, my self-care is with people and family. So oranges, again, put people in front of their own needs. But sometimes they get resentful if people don't acknowledge them for it.
Yeah.
So I personally think they're absolutely wonderful. If I ever want anything done, or anything worried, I just give it to an orange. They are so cooperative to work with. They're just magnificent.
That's our Nikki. And one of the things I liked about the orange is it takes a lot to make them mad.
Oh, yes.
This is in your book, but once you do, you've got a fireball on your hand.
Oh, you do. I mean, it's like a deer in headlights. When they let loose, they're very gentle, kind people, very sensitive people, sometimes hypersensitive to everybody's needs. And boy, when they unload, you're just standing there like, whoa, bad day, what just happened? And usually I found, Sherry, when that occurs, is there's something going on in the orange's life that just has them stretched so thin. They're trying to juggle either work and family, or they've got a sick child, or they've got worries on their mind, and they just get stretched thin.
Yes, that's Nikki for you. One of the things, she has some questions for you too when we transition into your healing book. One of the things it says in your book that reds are 85% of the population, and I found reds to be kind of controlling and possessive, and that only leaves 15% for the rest of the yellow, green, and orange. So that's 5% of Nikki's in the world, and 5% of thinkers, 5% of the greens and yellows, and we're having to balance 85% of red that I perceive as selfish and controlling.
Oh, absolutely. And going into the statistics, Nikki is. She's 7% of the population, and greens are 6, and the yellows are just 2. And, you know, we spend a lot of time having to comply to their world, because the red's world has to be lacking of chaos, and that means there has to be rules, and there has to be things that we have to jump through the hoops, and sometimes, truthfully, we can do that, and other times we get very rebellious, and the red just can't figure us out as far as the other three colors. And the red with the orange is, the red's perspective is the orange is never happy, and the orange is doing everything they can to make that red happy, and they can't even figure out why does this red feel this way. So it is. It's a real interesting dance, and when we recognize the differences in colors and how far and few between the other colors are, then it really puts it in perspective. I guess we better learn about them as much as possible, huh?
What happens when these different types try to work together, sleep together, get married? You know, how is there information in the book to sort of how to transition into the people who just are standing pat? Well, we got 15% of mutable people who try to make it happen.
Well, there is. I have a book called Love, What's Personality Got to Do with It? And when I started writing this book, it was interesting. I was writing it for everybody else and then realized as a yellow, oh, boy, I really needed this one. And what I found is that if I ask each of the four colors to define love, honest to goodness, Sherry, you wouldn't even think we're talking the same language. The needs are different. The way that they express romance is different. Their way they communicate, how they view commitment. So the more we learn about these other colors, it isn't about, you know, acquiescing who we are to them, but it's recognizing that they do see things differently. And as opposites attract, and let's go in from the relationship standpoint, opposites attract. And when you're in that dating process and getting to know each other, I mean, love really is blind because your friends can be telling you, I don't know about this person, they're really different than you, and, oh, no, we're just there, right, having a good time. And then once we get into that stage where we start settling into them, those little differences become irritants. And then once we get into the commitment stage where we're going to be with them for a long time, those are the things that if we don't realize the differences can actually start to break down the relationship to the point where the worst thing that happens, I found, in relationships of any kind, work or at home, we stop talking. And when we stop talking, then everything breaks down. Now at work, from the situation at work, having all the colors in your environment and your as employees or as your team, that's very beneficial because each one brings something different to the table. It doesn't take away the communication issues. It doesn't take away the differences or the how they set goals or how they function on a daily basis, but each one really can contribute to a team effort. And the nice thing about a team effort is when you have to deal with a personality who's different, you can go home. When you are married to an opposite, or you have, for example, in my daughter, I have an orange daughter, a red son-in-law, a yellow granddaughter, and a green granddaughter. So I have a whole rainbow just in one family. My orange daughter just becomes so frustrated with my green granddaughter because she's off in La La Land all the time, according to her. My red son-in-law can't figure out why they can't get along, and my little yellow granddaughter calls me and says, Grandma, you won't believe what they're saying to each other. And I'll laugh and I'll say, and what is that? And she says, I think they're all saying the same thing, Grandma, but they just don't know it.
Well, in your book, are there tricks to getting along with these other types?
There are. In my book on love, there's tips on how to speak their language, how to understand how they view things. And my love book is money, sex, friends, all the things that we run into. And it's like each color looks at it different. Here's the do's and don'ts. And then I have another book called Managing People, What's Personality Got to Do with It. And that was written for the business arena. But in reality, we're always managing people. In fact, managing ourselves a lot of time, but managing people. And each one of the books have, this is what you do, this is what you don't do, because each personality has a hot button that's a real irritant to them. And if you push that button, it's kind of like you talked about with Nikki, when you push that button, it's like, whoa, you get this fireball on your hand. It's like, oop, don't push that one again.
Nikki and I took your color test to find out what personality type we were. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yes. When you look at the type of each person and then you start to understand the differences, then what you can do is you can look at Nikki's strengths, she can look at your strengths, same with other colors, and then know where your weaknesses are. We, a lot, especially a yellow, never likes to admit they have them, but we all do. And in that particular case, then you can create a relationship where Nikki's strengths if they're your weaknesses, she can pick it up for you and vice versa. And then you can, if you have to put together this plan or this process, then you can do job responsibilities. Nikki says, well, I'm really good at this, so I'll do this. And you go, well, I'm really good at that. And then what you find is each person works in their strength. The advantage of that is there's less stress, there's less friction, there's less opportunity for any kind of breakdown in morale or just in the organization, that ripple effect. And it's a very effective way and works at home, but it's very good at work.
I want to give our listeners the numbers again in case they have a question for you. 877-876-5227. In Canada, that toll-free number, 888-815-9756. You can write to us at radio@vocalprofiling.com. We already have a question that we'll talk about in a minute. Or sherryonair@gmail.com. You've also found that these color types sort of ooze us into health issues based on our type. Can you sort of transition us to your healing book?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for asking. What I found is that any time we have to step out of our neurology, of our personality, and what I mean by that, we can do that on our own. For example, I can be a yellow and decide I'm just tired of strategizing. I just want to be green. I want to see a bigger picture. So I can step out of that color and function in other parts of the brain naturally. As long as I do that, it doesn't create stress. But when I'm forced to do that and I don't, maybe it doesn't, it doesn't feel right to me. Now, see, I just went into my green right there. It doesn't feel right to me. Then my yellow will dig in the heels, and now I'm in stress. So I found that each personality color has a susceptibility to illnesses or symptoms in certain areas. The green, their symptom area is always their throat, their shoulders. The yellow, it's always in that stomach, GERD, that esophageal area. And then the orange is, that's always the lower abdomen, lower back, that's where they carry worry, and the red's always their hips. So I actually mapped it that way. And then I went in my Healing Happens book and I took it to the next level and said, if we have these different stressors, there's an emotion attached to it. So in the Healing Happens book, I actually map in the organs and the glands and also the muscle structure where we hold specific emotions. And then fears in the spine. And again, it's done by color, but not really color. In that particular book, it just says, okay, if you hold grief in the right lung chest area, then, and the grief is caused, of course, by other people, maybe the loss of someone or, you know, that, oh my goodness, good grief type thing, then you're going to have susceptibility for weakness energetically and in the physiology of the body in that area.
You just mentioned something. I want to back up a second.
Okay.
You mentioned that you're a mixed yellow and green.
I am.
Okay. Can you be a red and a green or a red and a yellow? Or?
Well, let's go. Yes, you can. And, in fact, here's one of the things that I always, and it's perfect, again, for you to bring this up. We're neurologically designed one way, but that creates a rigidity in us that makes it difficult for us to fit in this world. So we always have to step what I call out of our color to be able to fit. It's like we create this coping color or this costume that we put on at a very early age that says, I'm just going to put my yellow hair on the hanger today and I'm going to go out and I'm going to be green or I'm going to go out and I'm going to be red. And that particular process we carry, again, through learned behavior. So from my standpoint, I can go as a yellow. I make decisions logically. I have to see the patterns, connect the dots to everything, have the time to think about it. But if I get caught up in the thinking, Sherry, and I can't get the answer I'm looking for or a bigger picture, I'll go to my green and get a big picture. Then I'll pull back, and then I'll say, okay, now how can I put a plan in place step by step to make this work? So I go into my red. One of the things for the personality, the red and the green have a difficult time crossing over, meaning that a green can be very open, very receptive, very creative. They can also be very dogmatic and very pragmatic, but not very long. That creates a greater stress. For me, as a yellow to go into my orange means that I'm in my weakest of my personality, and that's such an uncomfortable place, I can't stay there very long. In fact, truthfully, I have a difficult time even stepping into that orange for any length of time and will avoid it, frankly.
So we each can learn these transition skills then.
Absolutely, we can. And as long as we control the transition skills, meaning that we're doing things for our reasons and not being pressed, then it doesn't create a chemical reaction in the body that could ultimately lead to a breakdown and malfunction in the body. That's the whole secret of stress management, is all the tools we have is wonderful, but if you're going to have to function out of your color, then just know that you're doing it and do it as long as you're comfortable. And then when you're not, pull back.
Okay, we have a question from one of our listeners, from Chris. You said people are starting to want to heal rather than be cured. That's a great concept. Can you tell us about what you see in this area in the last 6 months? Is this accelerating?
Oh, absolutely. Healing is accelerated. Curing is returning the body to where it was when it broke down. Healing is making it better than it was before it broke down. Healing takes us back to that inner part of ourselves that recognize that, you know, this isn't supposed to be hard or painful or anything. So in the healing process, especially in the last 6 months with just all of the chaos going on, there's always this, you know, as crazy as it may sound, I've had people say that to me exactly that way. Carol, in this craziness, how can we find a place to heal? And what I say to them is chaos is when we have the greatest opportunity to heal. So we can heal lots of our life. We can heal it financially. We can heal it emotionally. We can heal it psychologically. So in this healing that's going on, we're being asked to go inside and really say, who am I? What am I good at? What do I want to do? What can I do to enrich my life and enrich the life of others? All of those are healing questions. It's not the curing questions are, what pill can I take? How can I get my back feeling better? What can I do to heal my feet? So curing is more the physical, healing is more the soul. And we're having a wonderful opportunity in the chaos to go in and really touch that special place inside of us and say, what can I do to make a difference and to change my life?
The other thing I hear from that question is starting to want to heal from the inside rather than be cured from the outside in. That's a biggie inside that question.
Absolutely. And healing requires that we participate in the process. Curing says, okay, well, I'm not feeling good. I'm going to go to the doctor, whoever it may be. And that's not, I am not anti-medicine. I am very pro-medicine. But it's taking and going to someone and saying, here, fix me. And those fix me's can last for only a short time, and then they reoccur. Healing comes in and says, okay, I'm going to go to a doctor, and listen, this, tell me what you can do for me, and then what can we do together? And that's the biggest change I've seen in the last 6 months around how we're dealing with our health and our body.
Well, let's talk about healing happens with your help, understanding the hidden meanings behind illness. I know Nikki has a lot of questions for you about this, and why did you end up writing this book, and what do you hope your audience to get out of it?
I wrote this book because I really, the whole focus of all of my work has been preventative medicine. And what I've realized is that when we can take care of the physical body, we can go and get what we need, we can change the diets. There's so much about the body we know. And that we can do, and we now are back into the mantra that's been for thousands of years, we are what we think. So there's a lot of focus on our thoughts. But there isn't a lot of focus on emotions and how those impact us. So my desire with Healing Happens with Your Help is to just show people that illness is just the tip of the iceberg, that there's more below the surface. And to truly heal, you can start any place, and you'll get to the same result. But if you only do one place, then you'll never get to the end result. So I did it from a preventative medicine standpoint and said, if you're carrying sadness, you're going to carry that in the left ventricle of your heart. You're going to carry it in the pancreas. You're going to carry it in the uterus. You're going to carry it in certain specific places. So if you find that you're always sad, these are the places in the body that you can go in and just say, I just am going to get that sadness out. And the mind's so powerful, you just say, I'm sad in my heart. Well, what can you do to change that? I could put joy in my life or joy in my heart. So it was a preventative situation. All my work has always been that.
Do you think you can die from a broken heart?
Oh, absolutely they do. In fact, there's tremendous research that shows that, especially, of course, those we research after the fact they've had a heart attack, but the left ventricle is where we have our heart attacks. And consistently in the research, the people that have been questioned and interviewed, we would ask them, what were you feeling before you had the heart attack? And the word that comes up all the time, the emotion, sad. I'm sad my life passed me by. I'm sad I didn't watch my kids grow up. I'm sad because, you know, my relationship wasn't where it is. So we really know that heart attacks are the sad disease. We also know that asthma is a grief disease, and that pancreas or insulin issues or pancreatic cancer is the loss of sweetness of life. And it's not food, passion. It's like find your passion, whatever that means. If it's only 5 minutes, find it. And so there's tremendous research in the fields of psychoneuroimmunology to know how our emotions are impacting our body.
When you find yourself in a situation that you just can't get out of, does your book address any of those pieces? Like a father who doesn't like his job, but he knows he has to keep it for his family. He's created a life around that job, but he's just unhappy. Does your book help move people through that?
It does, to some degree. It doesn't have action steps in it. But what it says is that, you know, we do make our choices, and we do it for a lot of reasons. And the father that's trapped in this situation is that this is the choice that he has chosen. Whether it's what he wants to do, he's chosen it. And the reason for that is, again, all of the different elements that you talked about. But what you can do is you can say, okay, this is where I am. This is where I am today. What can I do today that can remove the stress of this? What can I do that can get me in touch with myself? And that could be something like a father coming home and, you know, just saying to his family, listen, I need a half hour just all to myself. And then the family allowing that, or the father comes home and he just doesn't want to have to go and work, or he doesn't want to do this, or he just wants to get down on the floor and play with his kids. The body's exquisite. We have tremendous counsel points. So if we have to do something that we don't want to do, but we know why we're doing it, then put some counsel points in, and the brain will release endorphins, and we can actually release the stress so it doesn't end up coming in illness.
Nikki has some questions. You want to jump in here and ask some questions? Nikki works with us. She's our counselor to everyone here. She's the orange that takes care of everybody else, so your book was right on when it got her, and we all depend on her. She started reading this book and loves it, but she also had questions. So, Nikki?
Carol, you talk about fear and how fear can be the cause of so many illnesses. Can you talk about that a little bit?
I can. We are not born in fear. That is something that we get over the course of our lifetime. So it actually is a conditioned reaction. And the trigger from fear becomes these emotions. And when we get into a place where we have fear, the first thing that we get is fight or flight. Then maybe we get resentment or frustration, or maybe we get angry, or maybe we get terror. So what the fear does is it fosters all these emotions that are negatively charged, that change the chemistry of the body. And over the course of our lifetime, those emotions eventually, and the chemical changes, wear the body down. We are actually born, and in the evolution of our life, we're not born with fear, but we become fearful. For example, there are 6 fears that we, we have that are part of the evolution of our life. The minute that we leave the safe womb in the birthing, automatically when we come through the birth canal into this lifetime, hit this place where everybody is bright lights, everybody is, you know, grabbing, slapping, screaming, breathing everything, all of a sudden we come from our safe place and we start to develop our fear of survival. Then what we do is we go in, we get put in a nursery, then we don't know if anybody's going to come. And then that feeds that fear of survivor. Then we get the fear of unknown because we don't know if it's going to anybody's going to come. Will our mom be there? So we go there. Then we go into the fear of abandonment. Our moms go back to work or whatever, and we don't know if she's going to come home or not. And then she does, and we're okay, but then she goes and she's longer, or in some cases maybe she doesn't. So that's a natural part of abandonment when we get to the place with relationships. Then we have a fear of betrayal. None of us wants to look like a fool. None of us wants to have someone else hurt us. No one wants to reject us. That's another fear. And then our final fear is the fear of dying. And it's a maturation process. And in my research, we really aren't afraid of dying. We just don't want to suffer. So all of these things, sweetie, come in, and they're processes. And some personalities will put more focus on others. If may I have permission with you with an orange?
Sure.
Okay, and I asked you that before I gave you a disclaimer, so my apologies for that. But the orange's greatest fear is the fear of abandonment. And that's part of the motivation in them to take care of people the way that they do. It's a natural inherent part. But your job to take care of Sherry is so pure, so much integrity. But if something were to happen to her, you would have this sense of abandonment, or if she didn't call when she was supposed to or whatever. So from that standpoint, that equates to your lower back. It equates to your digestive system, the lower part. And so it can actually be mapped. And each one of us is a yellow. Mine is the fear of betrayal. And I am so afraid to get close to people because they'll betray me. And I look back, I certainly have enough history. But we each have each one of those, sweetie. And that's where the fear has the power. It's the emotions attached to it.
I can see that. I mean, there was so much. I was introduced to your books by our friend Chris, and I could see so much of us in all of your books. It was, I was so excited to be able to talk to you about it.
Oh, thank you. And again, I just, I'll tell you, I know that somewhere in the great cosmos, they put these oranges on the earth to just be able to take care of the rest of us while we're running around crazy trying to figure out what this is all about.
You know, I called Chris up after I took the test, and I said, I'm an orange. I don't want to be an orange. I see orange as kind of weak.
Oh, well, you know what? From the standpoint, if you measure them by the other personalities, I could understand that. I mean, the red is controlling. They can be passive-aggressive. They can be very demonstrative. They're, you know, it's my way or the highway. And, again, when I say that, I don't mean negativity against all the reds, but it's just the way they see the world. And then you have the greens that just want to make everybody, you know, have a good time, and they just kind of go from one thing to the other. And very, very, they can be very organized. And then you get the yellow that if someone said to me as a yellow, Carol, give me an answer right now, and I don't have time to think about it, I can be very short. I don't mean to be hurtful, but I can. And the orange, by nature, just is going around going, people get a clue. You know, you have to think about other people. You know, you just can't be in your own little world doing your own little thing. And that truly is the gift of the orange. But the other side of it is, Nikki, is that each of the colors are so into their own color and their own world because they're mainly, you know, just that internal, external part of it, that we forget to appreciate the oranges. And it's not like I'd have to say to you, oh, Nikki, Nikki, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, because after the third one, you'd think I was up to something. But what it would be nice is every so often is to just have someone say, Nikki, thank you for that great job. And that's what you live for is an orange, and that's both male or female, but not passive, not passive at all, sweetie. You just don't see what the value of conflict does. There's no value in it to you.
Carol, is there an ideal that an orange could combine with so that they don't get run over?
Well, from the standpoint of the orange needs in that abandonment part, they need stability and they need security. That is the most important thing to the orange is security. And the best personality to give the orange the security is the red. And now, that seems like, whoa, Carol, you just put them into this situation. But from the standpoint of knowing that they're going to be taken care of because the red's motivation is to be able to take care of the people and provide the basic needs for the people they love. Nikki, if she was paired with a red, would never have to worry about money or a house or security or any of the basic things that she needs. And reds are very loyal personalities, and so that would give her the relationship that she would need. Reds are also very family-oriented. They do like to have children. Oranges do also. So there's a dynamics there. So the most compatible with the orange is a red, and then it would be another orange, and then it would be a green, and the least compatible would be a yellow. Because the yellow wants to be in their head, and we forget that we even have a body, and we don't remember to say, I love you. And the orange every so often would be like, hello, I live here, you know, I do. Just every so often tell me I'm, you know, tell me you love me. And for yellows, we can't understand why. From a yellow standpoint, hey, if I'm in the same room with you, sweetie, I love you. But from the orange, that doesn't work, does it?
We just have a few minutes left, Carol.
Yeah.
We want to let people know how to get in touch with you, and then we'll come back to questions. Also, how to get in touch with you? Do you do private sessions? Do you do workshops?
Oh, thank you for asking, Sherry. I do. The best way to get in touch with me is through my website, www.ritberger. It is pronounced Reitberger, but spelled Reitberger. www.ritberger, R-I-T-B-E-R-G-E-R, .com. And on there, it has information about my workshops, and it has information about how to schedule an appointment with me and so forth. And my books are available through hayhouse.com or amazon.com.
And it's H-A-Y-H-O-U-S-E.
That's correct.
Hayhouse. Nikki, more questions. I know you have a whole tablet full there.
Okay, I'll be shorter and sweeter then. See, as yellows, Nikki, we want to tell you, you know, ask us the time, we'll tell you the watch, where to buy all the parts, so I'll be more concise.
I just have to say first, we're going to have to do another show with Carol because there's not enough time, and I have lots more questions.
Well, as you were asking questions, I went to Amazon and bought our other two books.
Oh, thank you.
Yay, I can't wait to read them. I wanted to ask you, if the emotion is causing the illness, if we take care of the illness, does it then take care of the emotion that we're having the problem with?
It does. And when we go in, we are designed to balance and neutralize the chemicals from negative emotions. For example, anger. Automatically, our body, when we get out of that place or we start getting too angry, will send the message from our brain, okay, chill, stop this. So we have those different aspects of emotions designed in us. What I find is the emotions don't really cause the illness, even though they're mapped in the body. But what the emotions do is they change our attitudes and our outlook on life. For example, if all we have is negative emotions, we have a lot of pessimism. So it's the combination of emotions, pessimism, fears, and then the body. But if you deal with the emotions, then it will energetically and physiologically change the chemistry of the body. That is part of the healing process, absolutely.
I know a young man who's not treating his wife very well, and he just complained today that he has an abscess in his throat, he has strep throat. What emotions is he going through to manifest that, and does it have anything to do with him not treating his wife very well and lying to her?
Oh, absolutely. That throat area in my world is a medical intuitive, energetically is self-expression. And there's two ways. One is there's something inside that he really should say, and that doesn't mean that it has to be hurtful, but something is stuck in his throat. The other thing is that we can't abuse other people and not have it become an irritant in our body. We're not designed to inflict verbal abuse on people. We really aren't. I mean, I know that we do, but we're not. So from that standpoint, what is happening is there's a big energy buildup in that throat area, and it's changing the chemistry of the body, and he's under stress all the time because he is being, abusive from a verbal standpoint. But one of the things that I would say to him is, what are you truly angry about? I don't believe it has anything to do with her. That's what I've learned in human nature. We lash out at the ones that are closest to us. But in reality, that may not be the problem. So from that standpoint, in my world, if he were to continue that, ultimately, it could turn into a thyroid issue.
Okay. Nikki, do you have another question?
Can we talk a little bit about how you began to see these colors?
Oh, my goodness. How I got this gift, I call it that now. It wasn't for a long time. I actually had a near-death experience. I died in 1981. I was declared medically dead, and then I came back. And my sight had been altered to where I could see movement of energy and colors around people. And the thought was it would go away in a very short period of time, probably had to do with the drugs and just the lack of oxygen. I was dead almost a little over 3.5 minutes, so I was just really on the verge of being able to come back or not. And but it's never gone away, and that was in 1981. And that's how I can literally see colors. I'm like a walking human X-ray machine.
Okay, I'm bouncing around. I'm going from one topic to the next. But
does it bother you to see that stuff all the time?
It does. It did. It does. It did. How's that for a good yellow answer? One side or the other. It does not ever go away. Anything that has atoms and molecules and motions, dogs, any animals, any plants, humans, water and movement, everything has an aura. And when I first started, it was very frightening. And I thought I was going crazy because I would see things in people. And then I realized that if this keeps up, I'm not going to be able to stay sane. And it's always there, but I just don't pay attention to it. I've redirected my sight to where I can see that soul of each person, all the healing colors and just all their beauty and their dancing and that little child part of them. So that's how I've been able to cope with this.
Okay. Do you feel that way about hearing things?
I'm sorry, yes. Would you please say again?
Oh, she asked me if I hear that way because I hear colors and I hear sounds.
Yes.
You know, I said one day, you know, this stuff's really easy. I don't know why anybody can't hear it. And it went away for 3 days. And I thought I would go crazy. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
I didn't know how people felt. I didn't have a place in the world. But it overwhelms me if I'm in a crowd or grocery store.
Oh, yes. It does me also, Sherry. It's a real sensory overload. And, you know, from you with your sound and the beautiful work that you do, it's vibration. And in my world with my sight, it's vibration. And both of us pick up that vibration, and then our job is to interpret it the best we can that works for us. That's the whole thing. But I do know when I get into, I have to literally avoid large crowds because it's such a sensory overload that it just kind of undoes me, frankly. So I try to avoid that part.
We have another question from a listener, but Nikki also has questions.
Well, because we're getting so short on time, I have a lot of questions. But I thought I ask about fear, and she talks about love also in the book. So I wanted you to talk about a little bit about love and the healing power of that.
Absolutely. In reality, Nikki, there's only one emotion, and that's love.
That's an orange question, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I'll tell you what, it is a very, very timely question because the only emotion there truly is love. And the further we get away from love, the closer we get to fear. It's kind of like a continuum. And when I talk about love, it isn't the love for other people that I'm talking about. It's accepting ourselves. The more we know about ourselves, the more we accept ourselves. The more we accept our weaknesses, the more we realize that we probably can't be all things to all people. All of those things are the love that I'm talking about. Self-acceptance is a tremendous healing tool. And so when we think of love, the reward of life is to love and to be loved. And that was one of the things I came back and realized, that this is the greatest gift on earth, is to be able to look in someone's eyes and to be able to see yourself through them. That's really what this love is all about. So that's, love does heal. It cancels out all of the negative emotions at the moment that you're in love with yourself or you're in love with someone or something else.
Carol, we are out of time. Give people your contact information again.
They can find out about me at www.ritberger.com. Has a lot of information on there, and email address and how to get in touch with me and everything. So that's the best way.
and go to Amazon and buy her book. Just look under Ritberger, R-I-T-B-E-R-G-E-R. They're all there. We are out of time. This has been wonderful. We're going to have you back forever.
Well, I would love that. Thank you.
Have you here as a permanent guest. I love the show. I love your energy. And listeners, thank you for being with us. And I will see that the question gets answered next time. It's about, what about babies born with diseases? How does that happen? So thank you for listening. It was great.